Hey, Founder Fam, before we dive into another incredible conversation, I want to share something really special with you. Whether you're just joining us or you've been following us since the beginning, you've been a critical part of our community working to change entrepreneurial education. I started Founder almost a decade ago with the mission to provide entrepreneurs access to the world's greatest business leaders. Our goal was to break down barriers to entrepreneurial education, and that's taken us on a journey from Founder Magazine to this podcast and beyond. And today marks the next step in that journey, Founder Plus. I'm proud to introduce you to Founder Plus, which is an all-access pass to each of our online courses and programs and their proven frameworks for success. It puts every strategy we've compiled from world-class instructors at your fingertips while connecting you to a global network of like-minded entrepreneurs. Founder Plus will take your business to the next level for today and tomorrow. So whether you've just joined our family or you've watched us grow from humble beginnings, we're really thrilled to have you join us in this exciting new phase of making the Founder brand and this company the world's best entrepreneurial community to launch and grow your business. So finally, before we get into today's episode, I'm inviting you to come back, check out Founder Plus, and go to founder.com/membership. I'm really excited, guys. This is an incredible new evolution of entrepreneurial education, and our mission is really to get as many of these founders that we interview to teach and also give back on the Founder Plus platform and really go more in depth with the knowledge and the experiences and the lessons learned that they're sharing all in Founder Plus. So guys, please go check it out if you're enjoying these interviews. That's it from me. I hope you enjoy this episode. Now let's jump in.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amorosa, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, Nathan here. Welcome back to another Founder interview. Today you're in for an absolute treat. We're here in our hometown, Melbourne, Australia, in our studio. We're interviewing Ronnie Teja. Now he's the master of SEO and growing brands really, really fast with SEO. One of his businesses, S-Keep, he's taken from 0 to 2 million monthly unique visitors in about 2.5 years. He's got like 10 other brands where he uses SEO to grow them. So the first question that I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job, aka how did you find yourself doing the work you're doing today?
That's an interesting story. When I moved to Canada, I was picking blueberries for about the first 8 months when we immigrated there. And I basically learned, so I used to go into these fields at like 4 a.m. in the morning, and I used to pick blueberries, and I used to cry for about 10 hours when I used to do it because I'd never had a manual job before. So I promised myself, when I did this every day, that I would never find myself in this position again. And so taught myself digital marketing. And for somehow, things have a way of working out. And here we are discussing this.
Yeah, wow. And so you come from India. How old were you when you went to Canada?
So I was about 22. So I was doing my master's at London School of Economics. My background is in wealth economics. Yeah. So, you know, working at the World Bank, parents called me, you know, ding, ding. And they're like, hey, look, we won the golden ticket and we're moving out to Canada and you're coming with. So there's no ifs and buts. It's like, you're coming with. And basically that. So ended up in Vancouver, which at that time was quite a small city, and there was no jobs in policy. So hence manual labor.
Yep. Got you. And why was that so hard for you?
It was hard in the sense that, of course, you moved from India to the UK, and this, I thought UK was my forever place. I was going to be based in London. I was going to go work there. Didn't end up working out, as we know, and then ended up in Vancouver. And then at that point of time, Vancouver being the city it was, there was no jobs in policy. And so as a result, it was just like, you know, I came with a big ego, first of all. Second of all, I was like, you know, I'm from LSE, anybody would recognize a degree. And so, you know, I was this guy, you know, 22-year-old, think he can take over the world. And ended up being, you know, humbled, I would say, in that situation. But having said that, everything else, it's like, if it weren't for Canada, I wouldn't have got the start to be an entrepreneur at all.
Mm. Yeah. So what was your background in marketing? So you said you know, obviously you didn't want to be in this position again. Like, did you just go online and start learning marketing, or what happened when you were 22? So how old are you now?
Yeah, I'm about 36.
Yep,
so
okay.
The funny story is, you know, by the power of Google, I basically started looking up how to do AdWords. And I taught myself digital marketing, which was basically like PPC and AdWords. And I got my first break working at HSBC, which is basically, I applied to them and I said, hey, look, and, you know, HSBC being the bank that it was, they said, look, we don't know what this digital marketing thing is. And you seem like a young buck who probably knows PPC and all this, these fancy like online terms. We don't know how long it's going to last. And you come in and you work for us. So I worked there, hated the job. I'm happy to say it, because it took about 6 months to plan one campaign. Got my second start again at Best Buy, which is, I think, where I learned digital marketing in its purest essence. So from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, I was trafficking out PPC campaigns, be it Facebook ads, be it Google ads, be it whatever it was. And I got to make a lot of mistakes on somebody else's coin. So that is where it's a washing machine. It's a 2.5 year washing machine. But I can tell you that particular experience taught me everything, anything I needed to know about, like, say, PPC and digital marketing from that perspective.
Interesting. So then from Best Buy, what happened next?
Basically ended up working for a couple of small e-commerce firms. And the interesting part about it all, right, is that I tried for a job. So there's a very big Canadian retailer called MEC, which is basically like REI in the US. And at that point in time, I'd applied for them as a digital marketing director. And they basically turned me down for the job. And I was curious. And I took the guy out for a coffee and I said, hey, look, what is the reason you rejected me for the job? And they basically told me to my face. They said, you're a flight risk. So I said, what do you mean by you're a flight risk? They're like, you change your job every 1 to 2 years. So I'm like, so am I supposed to spend the rest of my life in your servitude for $100,000 a year, or shall I be taking a chance on myself? And I said, I've made all these guys enough money. So I said, the one thing I owe to myself, even if I do fail, is the opportunity to be able to bet on myself. And that's what I did.
Mm. So how old were you then when you started your first business, and what was it?
I was about like 26, 25, 26, around that.
Yeah. So about 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago, roughly. Yeah. And, you know, I read somewhere, I swear to God, I'm not making this up, because everybody seems surprised by this, is that I read somewhere that the margins on watches are over 80%. and I said, okay, this sounds interesting. And, you know, this was like when influencers were coming up big, and, you know, movement watches was a thing as well. And I said, okay, so where are watches made in the world? Apparently, Quartz watches are made in Shenzhen. So I caught the one flight from Vancouver to Hong Kong. It's a $500 flight. Right? The world's largest watchmaking fair happens in Hong Kong at HKTDC.
Yes.
And I basically, every morning from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., I would show up at every booth, bug every person out there to learn more about watches. And on about day 7, I found this one guy, and he said, I see you coming in every day. You're asking a lot of questions. Do you even know how watches are made? And I said, I have zero clue how watches are made. And he basically, this guy took a chance on me, right? And he says, come live with me in Shenzhen. So basically invites me to his house, and I live for free with him for like 30 days, learn the crafts of the trade. And then I have the gall to ask him for a 90-day line of credit. So I said, can you loan me money, like $100,000, and give me a 90-day line of credit, which is unheard of if you have a Chinese supplier. There's no way nobody's going to give you that. And especially like a young buck. He says, look, I'll give you, you know, we'll set up a payment plan, and we'll give you, you know, I'll fund your first run, right? And for whatever powers there may be, whatever savings I had, I put it into this washing machine called Facebook ads, and it has somehow worked out for me. Like, it's luck, it's chance, it's time and place, but it's also the trust of this human being who I met and has taken that chance on me.
And that was Brandzio.
Yeah, that was Brandzio Watches, yes.
And so you still run that company now, and you still use that supplier?
Yes, same one.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed in 10 years. He's never raised prices on me. It's like it's family.
Yeah, wow. And what were the challenges in the early days of starting that business?
There was a fair few. I think the first run that we did with the watches, we basically had an issue where when we came up with the logo and the designs and everything else, somebody at that point of time had a Kickstarter with a brand that looked exactly like ours. So here we are, a month into the production run, and basically with somebody doing a $30,000 campaign on Kickstarter with the same logo, because Vancouver, you know, it has a couple of mountains in the back. So we basically thought, you know, having two peaks in the back would be a great idea. Lo and behold, somebody else had the same goddamn idea. So you know, we had a month into a production run and, you know, you see this like Kickstarter campaign and you're like, oh man, we're screwed. And, you know, whatever we said, people were like, you know, it knocks the wind out of you because you're like, you've put your heart and soul into, you know, this design and everything else. And then it's all gone. And I said, you know what, let's just give it a go, see what happens. Their Kickstarter failed, ours didn't, it worked out for us. And then basically we were able to scale from there. We said, look, we're just going to keep running the course no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. So that time it was only me as the sole employee. So my name was John. So I was John on customer service because, you know, Ronnie had a very thick Indian accent back then. Still do, but not as thick.
Love it.
Yeah.
So what were the key stages of growth for Brandzio? Like, when did you know you were onto something? You said that you know, back then, Facebook ads, obviously much easier back then.
Much easier, much cheaper. No iOS 14.5, 14 or 15, as we all know about it. I mean, it's like the 1 year anniversary of iOS 14 too, as we know. Look, Facebook ads was working for us in a massive way, right? It was basically like this washing machine, and you put as much money in there. The ROAS was about 4 to 5. It was a barren market. You know, CPMs were like super cheap, $10 or something, which cost us $50 now. The cost per acquisition cost for these watches were like $14 for something that we're selling for $150, yeah. Right? So, you know, even if you factor in everything, we were making almost 100% return on you know, after each sale. Of course, the landscape has sort of changed over that period of time, and you have to get more sophisticated with creative and everything else. But what changed from my perspective was actually sort of hiring, my first hire and everything else from there on, because 6 months into it, I burnt out. And, you know, one person can't do the ads, one person can't do customer service. You can't really like please everyone, especially in a D2C business, which is, you know, and manage the supply chain at the same time. So, yeah.
Mm. So when did you know you were onto something though? Like, when did you go, yep, this business, I'm going to be okay?
So that's an interesting point. I think in the first week when I ran the ads campaigns, it was just basically like seeing. So believe it or not, my first market where I launched was actually, I used Australia as a test market because people were more open to buying online.
Yes.
And they had that sort of trust factor. And when I saw conversion rates of like 8 to 10% happening in this market, and I was like, holy hell, I'm making $1,000 a day. It was literally from the get-go. And I was like, I'm on to something. And I just need to scale this no matter what happens. But there's a funny story about that too. Within 2 weeks of me starting, PayPal banned my accounts.
PayPal banned your accounts?
Yes.
So all the money was frozen?
All the money was frozen. Everything. So I have about, I think, 18 to 20 grand stuck in PayPal, right? And everything's gone. And I'm like, I just have $5,000 in my bank account, cash, liquid for ads, right? Inventory, of course, we know that I've been given a bridge loan, basically. And I'm like, it's gone. My business is gone. It's like, it's that little glimmer of hope, and it's all already gone down the drain. And PayPal holds your funds for 180 days.
So what'd you do?
Got back on the horse, launched another website. This time focusing on the US, and spent every last dime I had to monetize the product again. You know, there is no linear path of entrepreneurship. You have to fail, and you know, as we'll find out, I've failed more than a few times.
Mm. So, you know, you've started many other brands. You said, you know, you've bought and acquired other brands. So you have like a group of brands. What? Why?
It's an aggregator strategy. There's a couple of reasons. Point in case is this PayPal ban hammer being one. The second thing was in 2018, I got the ban hammer from Google, Facebook, and whatever other medium I was using all on the same day. So imagine you have this great company running, great washing machine, you know, you're making money hand over fist, everything's going phenomenal. I've got about 30, 35 employees. And then one fine day, you know, you go from making like, say, you know, let's say $20,000, $30,000 in revenue down to zero. And you have nothing. And you're like, I have $1.5 million in bills to pay, right? There's zero money coming in. There's no ads, there's no nothing. And I'm like, what's going to happen? So that's when I said, look, we need to start divesting and diversifying everything, right? So we can't just be 100% dependent on ads. we need to start looking at acquiring other brands which have diversification in terms of SEO, which have diversification in terms of affiliate marketing, which have diversifications in terms of, you know, even if we were to move websites from one to another, even if the main website goes down, we still have supplemental income coming in from the other websites, which was quite important. And that's sort of worked out for us in the long run.
Yeah, wow. So that. So what did you do? How did you recover from that one?
A lot of begging and a lot of calling people up. It's literally, I hit up every person I knew who had some contacts within Google. I mean, they did eventually reverse the ban, but it was about 3 months in. And 3 months is like, you know, you've lost about, let's say, about $2 million in revenue. And I thought at that point in time, I'm going to be, you know, all these tech pro books I was reading, which was like, I'm going to be the captain of the ship. I'm going to go sink with the ship and go down with it, which I would not recommend to anyone in this day and age. The first chance you have to have a plan A, B, C ready, which is basically you should be able to cut, you should be able to shrink and grow your team as and when your business grows. I think for me, that path was quite linear. I did not understand that aspect of it, which I understand a lot better. I'm happy to share it as well. And in the meantime, it was just basically we had a $2 million loss that year.
Yeah.
So you suck it up.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
So let's talk about kind of this diversification strategy, because one thing that you've actually started to teach our team, and I'm really interested in, I know a lot of people watching this will be, is SEO. Like SEO is this kind of mystical thing that, you know, you don't really know who to trust, what to follow, what works, what doesn't. And, you know, you showed me one of your brands, Eskeep, and it's growing really, really, really fast just off SEO. You've taught me the power of first party data. Like, how did this come about?
Yeah, I mean, part of that whole situation was coming in through, you know, the Google banhammer. And I said, look, we can't continue going down this path. This is like literally you're so dependent. I mean, we are platform dependent in this day and age in e-commerce.
Yep.
No matter which way we end up, you know, Amazon, Apple, Google, or Facebook are going to hold the purse strings. But at the end of the day, what you can do is you can switch to organic traffic, right? It's kind of like, you know, switching to like Facebook pages or switching to like TikTok or something else and getting those visits. With Eskeep in particular, what I was able to do was we came up with a content strategy and a part of it is also through networking and talking to people like yourself and talking to people like around the world. My sort of knowledge came from like this really cool SEO conference that happens in Chiang Mai every year called the Chiang Mai SEO Conference.
Oh.
And there's a lot of cool people there who I met, who I talked to, and I was able to actually learn from the experiences. The hard and fast rule of SEO is quite simple, right? When people say content is king, it's actually right. Now, the thing is how you go about crafting your SEO strategy is all dependent on what you want out of it, right? If you just, what Google is moving to today in SEO is quite interesting. They're moving to a no-click strategy, which is basically they show you structured snippets, they show you the map, and they show you the ads, and that's pretty much it, right? But the thing is, you can actually expand upon it. So you have to like look at your whole strategy in terms of top of funnel, mid funnel, bottom funnel. So similar to ads, right? Mm-hmm. So you say, well, let's take an example of watches, yeah. Right? When I'm in the market to research a new watch, what would I search for? I would search for best watches 2022, best watches review 2022, best cheap and cheerful watches, quartz watches or something else like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Or watches under $100.
Yep.
Right? Very exploratory questions. What you want to do is you want to sort of appear within that customer's radar. So average time for people to recognize your brand in this day and age, that touch point is no longer 8 to 10. It's no longer 10 to 15. It's about, you know, 18 to 25. It's that sweet spot. That's the amount of times that people have to see before they have a brand recall of where you're going to end up purchasing it. So that means they'll come to your website, they'll do the research, they'll read about you on a blog, they'll read about you on Reddit, which is an extremely powerful tool in terms of reviews and everything else. And then they'll probably see your ad, and then they're going to come back to your website. So that top of funnel strategy of being upfront of the customer is extremely important. And when I talk about first party data, from an SEO perspective, is that this person is there, they're researching your website. What's the harm in retargeting them, right? What's the harm in reaching out to them? Give them an incentive to come back, right? Give them a discount code. Give them something to like, you know, when they're on that site, to make them believe that you are this one watch that they want at the end of the day.
Mm. So has SEO now been critical to all your different brands?
It is. It's a very, very important divestment strategy. When I look at the thing is, You have to look at what markets you're in. So I'm in different markets around the world, right? But I've put all my eggs in the basket for the US.
Yep.
80% of my revenue comes from the US. Yep. There's no other market I would want to dominate more than the US market in just in terms of e-commerce.
Why?
It's just simply just because of the scale that you have there. China in there, India in there. India's, you know, people change their loyalty for dollars and cents. In the US, if you are a trustable brand, if you're able to win the customer over, people will come back and buy from you no matter what, right? There's a lot less hassle. I'll give you my experience. Like, I tried to launch in India. I'm Indian, and I failed at it miserably. Because I couldn't. It's a loss-loss scenario for me at the end of the day. It's like literally where people want to pay like $100 for a watch, but they accept the service of a Rolex, a $10,000 watch. And I said, no, thank you. You know, it's like, it's, you also have to look into this, what matches the values or not. And at some point in time to have the, you know, to have the sense or to have the sort of boundary to say, look, appreciate your business, but this isn't really for me, is fine. Because do you really want those headaches at the end of the day? There are certain brands that have done very well in India. And I think that's an interesting perspective too. But when you're talking about the mystical part of SEO, which is like, you know, people say, hey, you have to focus on organic traffic or you have to focus on SEO. Like, what does it actually mean? I'll put it down for you in a couple of simple words for this audience, right? SEO is basically anything that you're not going to do in a paid form, right? When you look at like stuff that is going to be helpful for the audience at the end of the day, it could be reviews, it could be research, it could be comparisons, it could be, you know. So when you're looking at the discovery journey, that aspect and creating content around that is quite important. So that top of funnel strategy is all SEO driven, right? People who show up from an SEO perspective could be your website, it could be sites like Reddit, it could be sites like Facebook, it could be anything else. So it's important to, when you're building your SEO strategy, to be able to divest not only on Google, but it's also good to divest on these other platforms as well. Because for lack of a better word, they will come up no matter what, right? Even if you're an Amazon seller and people at the end of the day say, hey, you know, I'm running Amazon PPC, I don't need organic traffic. But do Amazon sellers actually know that Amazon rewards you for driving PPC traffic to the Amazon pages? It's quite interesting.
Yeah, so it is interesting because you think traditional e-commerce businesses, you think social and you think paid, you think wholesale, but not many think SEO really. Like that's from my experience speaking to people. But as time is going on, like I was speaking to one of my friends, he has an e-commerce store and he's like, yeah, I started on the SEO pathway about a year ago. And he's like, it's golden now. Like people are searching for my products and like, you know, it's really, really interesting. So I'm curious, like, do you believe that every e-commerce business needs to have some form of an SEO strategy?
Yeah, you need to have diversification at the end of the day, or you'll end up in my, like, I'm a living, breathing testament to that situation, right? 2018, Banhammer, all of a sudden you're in a $2 million loss situation. It's like, you don't want to end up there. Like, there's no way you want to end up there. So and the thing is, like, an SEO thing is, the SEO strategy is something that's going to happen in the background, right? It's not instant gratification that you're looking for ads. It's not like you're going to put on $100 or $200 or $300 and expect a sale immediately,
yeah.
Right? It's something that even with S-Keeper, and I'm saying when I'm talking about the growth, it's 2 years and 2 million people, right? But this is like, it's very good to look at the end goal, but let's look at what's happened in the back, right? It's 2 years of every week generating, you know, 6 to 8 articles, top of funnel articles. At some point in time, your research is going to run out. It's talking about generating 2 to 3, you know, 20,000 word articles every month, right? So it's the end goal sounds really good, which is like, you know, you've got 2 million visitors at the end of the day, but it's also like the hard work that's happening at the, you know, and the growth. It's a gradual growth. It's not going to go like, you know, from 0 to 100 all of a sudden. It's going to go from 0 to, you know, 5,000 to 10,000. Then gradually when you see the returns, you're like, holy hell, why am I not doubling down on this? And then when people come searching, like there's months where the SEO revenue of a company exceeds that of a paid revenue. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just people who come and research and they end up buying. Like it's like all of a sudden it's just phenomenal. That's like free money, free traffic.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this episode and learning a ton. As you know, in this series, we interview some of the greatest founders of our generation to find out how they did it. However, if you're thinking of starting your own business and you want to hear from some incredible stories from everyday people like you or I who are actually in the trenches, only been building their business for maybe 1 year or 2 years, like that are building right now and they're really in the early stages, but they're getting success, you should come and check out our new podcast, From Zero to Founder, hosted by our community manager, Molly Flynn. These are in the trenches stories from our very own successful students that have gone through some of our programs. People just like you who are deep within the process of building their very own successful business. These are the founders of tomorrow. You can find the From Zero to Founder podcast on all platforms. And remember, it's founder without the E. All right, now let's jump in the show. What's your framework? If you were to start over again tomorrow, what process would you follow for a new brand? Talk us through it.
Okay. Let's take the example of watches again, right? So if I were to have another e-commerce brand, I think hiring a content writer, right? Doing my keyword research, having looked at some sort of a, let's say like a hero brand.
Yeah.
So for example, my hero brand would be Rolex, or it could be like, you know, Chapek or something. Yeah, whatever it is, right? So I would take that and I would say, look, what is the SEO strategy? I would craft my SEO strategy similar to what they are doing, right? Rolex is a luxury brand. And let's say I'm launching a luxury watch market brand, right? Which means I want to target wholesale, I want to target retailers, and I want to go after that. The secondary aspect I would look at was, of course, paid ads, look at creative, look at everything else. But the main crux of that all is, what is the look and feel? What is the customer service? What is the sort of customer experience I want to be giving to my customer, right? It's that sort of that Zappos strategy of, you know, where people would call in to a Zappos line to say, hey, I want a pizza delivered to my dorm room. And people would actually, from the Zappos customer service, would actually do that and not charge the customer at the end of the day. You're buying a $100 pair of shoes. You don't expect a pizza delivery coming to your dorm room, but it happened. And that's what gave Zappos a very cult-like following at the end of the day, right? Taking it back around to it from an SEO perspective, it's like when you're having your divestment strategy, it has to be 30-30-30, right? 30% on social, 30% on SEO, and 30% on, you know, paid. And then you take the 10% and you invest whatever budget you had into customer service.
Love it. So talk to me around kind of that content strategy. So you said have a content writer.
Yeah.
Like how many articles would you start putting out a week? You've got your, you know, you've got your research. To go from basically 1,000 or a couple of thousand visitors a month to 2 million a month, like that's insane in a couple of years. Like that's next level.
Yeah.
Like I don't hear of many brands doing that.
You guys got lucky.
No, but you do it all the time, right? You got a formula.
Yeah.
So is it like, I'd love to delve a little deeper.
Sure. Well, it depends on the niche, right? So this is a general framework from that perspective. Like I'm happy to, like every niche, Google would respond quite differently in terms of what that sweet spot is, right? My sweet spot that I would always recommend to anybody is, you got to hammer out about 6 to 8 articles every week. Keep it. So to get a measure of how many words you want to use, you want to look at, let's say that Rolex example, right? If Rolex is banging out about 1,000 word article, right? And they're only doing about 2 a week, I would bang out about 4 a week and I would do about 1,500 word articles, right? Mm. So we're doing whatever Rolex does at a minimum, which is actually high. It's a Google trusted brand. People know about it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you're kind of giving signals to Google, right? That I want to outrank Rolex. I want to be more trusted than Rolex. And the only way Google is going to trust you, if you're consistent.
Yes.
Right? Consistency is key. What people do is they'll write about 2 articles and they just give up. Oh, I'm not seeing anything coming up in SEO. So, oh, this isn't working for us. Okay, goodbye. But whereas if you do it consistently over a long period of time, Google's going to say, wait a second, we're going to index your new blogs here. We're going to index your new content pages here. But guess what? All the stuff you've written over the last 6 months, we're going to start indexing that too. And then all of a sudden, it's like that hockey stick growth will come from that perspective. So consistency, number one, is key. Looking at your closest competitor and looking at, you know, what sort of articles they're writing and what sort of that exploration pathway they're taking is interesting. Another thing that not a lot, I keep mentioning Reddit because Reddit is quite interesting from that perspective. If you ever go into like the watches subreddit, right? People always ask questions about certain reviews, or they ask questions about, you know, what do you, could be about a brand. It could be about, hey, I have a $5,000 budget. I'm on the market to look for a new mechanical watch. What do you recommend? So it's a really good place to go look for content ideas. And the thing about it is you can look at Ahrefs, you can look at Semrush, you can look at all the other places, But here's something where your user feedback is coming in real time. So you can actually use that to craft a really good content strategy. And the thing is, like, with content planning and content writing, you can actually, like, have your whole calendar planned out within 2 weeks for the rest of the year. Yeah, I mean, of course, you'll update it every 3 months, but the basic stuff that you want, the baseline, the foundation level, yeah, they won't change. The years may change. The questions about certain, you know, niches or industry movements may change. But watches is such a, you know, it's interesting because watches will, you'll have three main movements. You'll have quartz, automatic, and mechanical. And mechanical, you can't really change much. The biggest example for changes will come in quartz watches. Mm.
So the 30, 30, 30, and then 10, that was a really, I love that thought. So you guys are still spending money on ads.
Yep.
But you're still heavily investing in SEO. So you have always a diversified strategy with your brands.
Correct.
How'd you work that out?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
Lots of mistakes, lots and lots of mistakes, you know, money. I think there was a time that I think I flushed about 50 grand down the toilet in ads and thinking that something's going to work out, but it's not really going to work out. The other thing that a lot of people actually go down the wrong path of looking at it is, you know, with digital marketing, what we have been spoiled at looking at the instant return of ROAS, right? So when you look at the ROAS and you look at that instant return and you're looking at all this other stuff, what people are looking at is like, what is the brand lift? What is your mother brand lift happening with certain strategies? So something that I've tested out over the last 30 days, which I actually kind of, like, I'm happy to share this, is that we started running very targeted TV ads.
TV ads?
TV ads. TV ads in certain regions. And bless America for the late night TV and the people who watch it. And we were able to actually give coupon codes on that. It's kind of like influencers, right?
Yeah.
So you're giving out coupon codes, you're giving out all this stuff, and you're looking at the brand uplift of that measurement of this coupon code being redeemed on your website from the hours of, say, when TV is cheap, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., and they're actually looking at how many searches in Google are happening. So always keep this mindset open for testing. Always keep this mindset open for looking at different things. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. One time a friend once said to me, you know, people have a short-sighted view on paid ads because, you know, you're still paying, even if you don't get a sale, you're still putting out a billboard for your brand.
Correct.
Right? And there's companies that pay for billboards while you're driving, right?
Yeah.
When you're running an ad, you're still looking for that return with this direct response mindset. And yeah, that's interesting. For us, we need to get bigger on, like, what is that split between direct response and brand? Because I think so often people are just looking at ads from an instant return.
Yeah, you're looking at performance marketing, right? You've got your blinders on. Like, where's that macro view? Like, especially if you're looking at, like, what is that ROAS that you're happy with? Like, for example, we don't look at 2 or 3 ROAS anymore. I'm happy with the 1.1 to 1.2 ROAS, which, you know, you'll skill me for this. But I'm happy to do it because in the grand scheme of things, I know that in terms of the audience reach, in terms of, you know, the attention span and what customers have today, I am looking at growing that brand and getting more in front of more people. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is not in month number one, but number 2, 3, 4, people are going to come and connect, you know, convert in organic, direct, and other channels.
Yeah, got you. We have to work towards wrapping up, but can you tell us about first-party data, something you taught me?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one, you know, with the, well, I had mentioned before, you know, with the advent of iOS 14, you know, and the 1 year anniversary and 14.5 and 15, the thing is, like, there is no time in our lives as digital marketers that this is kind of the crux of the whole situation. Is like using email, using SMS, using, like, first party cookie capture is going to be more important than anything else ever, right? How, if a person's coming to your website, like you're giving that example of a billboard, they've seen your billboard. In fact, they are on your website. Why are you not giving them that opportunity to convert there and then? Give them a lead magnet to capture the email. Like, try and get that, you know, get the customer roped in. Make them fall in love with your brand. It could not necessarily be through discounts. It could be somewhere other. And a good example of that is this website that I like browsing called MyObvi, which basically makes collagen powder. Which,
yeah, and I see them on Twitter. Yeah, these guys
and they've
are
done
massive.
A phenomenal job of it, right? Like, once you go to the website, they'll either offer you a discount, they'll offer you some helpful tips, or they'll, you know, they'll happy to mail you a free sample of the packages. Like, sample package, man, in the mail. They'll take loss on that first sale, but once they get you in that funnel, it's phenomenal, right? So your first party data is more important because you actually own it. GA4 is moving towards your first party data. Google Ads moving towards your first party data. It's that same thing of where every major platform that you're on, they want to become siloed with their data. They don't want to share it. Amazon was the first in the game. They are the masters of the first party data. They never share the data off that platform. They said, if you want that first party data, please use Amazon DSP, yeah. Right? Apple now is launching their own DSP, which is what news about from 2 days ago, which is basically, if you want to advertise on Apple, you've got to use our ecosystem, right? Facebook's going to do the same. So is Google. So, you know, that whole thing of like cross-channel attribution and everything else, it's gone. Like, it's changed. Like, I give it a year, it's not going to be the same. So you best be prepared. You best be upfront about it. Make your customer match lists. Make sure that you have, you know, custom lists built in Google and everything else so that you can actually use your email list, craft something around your email list, similar audiences, and be able to target that. You do it in Facebook ads. You do it in Google ads. Apple's not going to allow it, man. Those days of like, you know, putting in, when I'm talking about 10 years ago, of putting in $5,000 and being able to survive that business, I won't be able to survive that today. I guarantee you. Like, it's like...
Yeah, so really what you're saying is having a longer view approach to driving customer acquisition, using things like SEO as a top of funnel discovery, people find you, and knowing that people will come back and potentially buy in the
future.
Correct.
It's a billboard thing. It's like that attention span. You want to grab, and remember, 18 to 25... That's that magic number that we found for us. It might differ for other people, right?
I'd love to talk about switching gears on burnout. You said you've experienced burnout as a founder. What's your view on that? How did you recover? And what's your view on hustle culture?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you asking me this question, because I think that there's a lot of tech bro books that are out there, right? There's a lot of tech bros in general. It's like, you know, 0 to 1, man, I'm Peter Thiel and I've been able to change my life. Or I'm Elon Musk, you know, Elon Musk did so-and-so, Steve Jobs did so-and-so. But what people don't understand at the end of the day is like, it's okay, you're human. My first burnout came in when I was John, right? The customer service agent. And I was wearing about 6 different hats in my business. Mental health isn't really talked about much, female or male founders. And the only way I knew and to delay this burnout was drink and drink till oblivion. I gave up drinking about 2.5 years ago for that very fact, because I needed help and I asked for help at the end of the day. So I have no issues discussing that. You know, once in a while I'll seek out therapy, which is once every 3 months, and it's a healthy way of dealing with it. You need to talk to someone. You can't really look at somebody like myself or yourself, who are like 10 to 15 years into the journey and expect to be, you know, like Nathan Chan, right? Overnight, and you're looking at, you know, like, it's that imposter syndrome. And the world and these books and everything else makes us believe that these are the people we aspire to be. But the journey that we have been through and everything else is it's not linear, it's a roller coaster. And, yeah, I'm grateful that you have given me this opportunity to answer this question.
So do you think that burnout is a rite of passage to be a founder? Like,
well, my personality is all in or all out. So, I mean, for me, I would say, yeah, it worked for me. But for some people, it's a marathon. Entrepreneurship is a marathon. It's a marathon for sure, right? It's you have to get your boots on, and you have to, you know, run for about, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And not many people are ready to make that ride. Because most likely, entrepreneurs, they will face burnout within the first 3 to 6 months, and chances are they'll give up and go back to their 9-to-5 jobs.
So you stopped drinking, you started seeking help. Could you still work, or were you crippled from work? Or
no, man, I was good to work. Like, that work never stops. I work 7 days a week. My grounding exercise is actually hitting the gym every day, hitting the gym or going spin or cycling. Yeah. So it's like every day, no matter where I'm in the world, I need, even airports, I need to find a gym. And that is my one sort of grounding moment. It's 1 hour. I'm disconnected from the world. I got Malcolm Gladwell in my ears, you know, listening to Revisionist History, which is a phenomenal podcast as well. And then, you know, it's up and up from there.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing and being open, man. Yeah. We're going to move to the hot seat round.
Sure.
Rapid fire questions. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Never given. That's from my mum.
What does that mean?
You know, it's funny. There's a my boarding school I went to had the same logo, that same model. My mom told me the same thing. So when I started as an entrepreneur, and you know, you've heard about the roller coaster journey, and that there were times in my life that I said, this is not possible. My first time was when I had only $5,000 left on bank account, PayPal banned everything, and my mom said, don't worry about it. Just don't give in. And that point I was like, you don't know the shoes I'm in. Like, what are you pretending to be? She's like, just don't give in. Just stick to it. Right? So to have that sort of sole focus and to have that long-term view and keep going at what you're doing is extremely, extremely important. 80%, 90% of people, I would say even 95% of the people tend to give up. That first adversity that they get. Every adversity, you can climb, you can find your way out of. Google banned my accounts, I found a way out of it. Facebook banned my accounts, I found a way out of it. Every challenge, there's a way to meander it. I won't say you can over, it's not a hill, but there's a way to meander it.
What's something you think founders should do more of?
Seek therapy. Seek therapy and look for help. Like we don't really end up discussing you know, feelings and everything else, because we you know, society in general says, oh, you are XYZ and this is the position or epitome that you have to be, and you have to be this persona. But nobody says, you know, you can just be a gentler, sort of a more nurturing person as well.
What's the best book you've ever read?
Ha, that's an interesting one. There's a few, but the one I would say that sort of had the most impact in my life for me would probably be the Steve Jobs book, believe it or not.
Mm.
It's quite interesting, and that anecdote of how he hustled his own co-founder Steve Wozniak to build the code for a game, and basically never told him how much he got paid, because I think he got paid like that famous anecdote of how much he got paid, and he only gave Steve Wozniak about $5,000. I was like, this guy, he knows what he's doing. But it was interesting. Like, I look back at it very fondly. But would I follow that book? Nah, probably not. What's something I've learned today? Well, I was in Uber ride over with a fellow from South Africa, and he told me that Zimbabwe in the 1970s was the breadbasket of Africa, which is quite interesting.
There you go. Last question. If you could have dinner with any entrepreneur, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, you've put me on a spot here. Ah, probably my granddad, man. Like, it's weird. Like, my granddad he's quite a resilient man. He's seen a depression. He's seen a few famines in India, and he was able to bring up 8 brothers and sisters through it. And for me, there was nothing more entrepreneurial than that, to bring up his parents and 8 brothers and sisters in the 70s, when, you know, there was a food shortage going around as well. So
yeah, wow,
quite interesting.
Awesome. Well, Ronnie, thanks so much for taking the time, man. It's so great to do these interviews in the studio. And congratulations on all of your success. I'm really excited to see where it goes next. And yeah, we're going to get your help on the SEO side. And thank you so much.
I appreciate it, mate. Thank you.
Hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in-depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.